Thanks, Stuart. I'm not sure about the pedigree stuff. There's a few people in New South Wales don't agree. Thank you for the opportunity to come today. I acknowledge the Deputy Prime Minister. The first time I met Mark was during the Olympics, and we had a substantial trade problem. And we thought we'd better go and see the Trade Minister. And we were a bit unsure as to how he would respond, you know, given the political nature of these things. He said, "This is for the country to be fixed this afternoon." A tremendous example of how governments, in my view, should work, and a credit to him as a person. I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that the Deputy Prime Minister has spoken about, but with a slightly different twist. Is Australia at risk of developing a cargo cult? As you know, cargo cults originally developed during the war with the worship of aeroplanes, which would arrive out of the sky filled with food and goods. After the war ended, the locals wanted the supplies to continue. They lit fires along the sides of the runway. An air traffic controller would sit in a wood hut with wooden sticks as headphones and bamboo antennas on his head, waiting for the plane to land. They were doing everything right. It all looked exactly the way it did before, but the planes didn't land. Something essential was missing. In 2006, the Council of Australian Governments agreed to an ambitious transport reform agenda for moving cargo around more safely and productively. The National Transport Commission worked closely with industry and governments to develop the national reforms just outlined, quad axle groups, B triples and smart trucks. All the things we should do were put in place. Everything looks the same, but there's little sign of any productive trucks coming. Something essential is missing. A strong commitment from governments to map a road network for those trucks to run on. Today I want to talk a little about the National Transport Commission and its cooperative reform model and the challenges for productivity, safety and pricing reform. The National Transport Commission was formed in the 1990s, and one of the architects is sitting here today. It was Nick Greiner and Bob Hawke who said that the problems on the roads and the differential pricing structures needed to change. The two of them led the reform for many of the things that have been achieved over the last 10 years and more. At that time, interstate trucking faced different road rules, driver licence categories, registration classifications, charges, mass, dimensions, driving hours. Everything was different. You could be flouting the law just by crossing the border. The changes brought in by Nick Greiner and Bob Hawke saw the creation of the National Road Transport Commission to coordinate this regulatory environment, and a mandate which was later extended to rail and intermodal. Reforms are developed by trying to work closely with industry and governments. The Business Council of Australia's report, A New Contract for Federal-State Relations, identified the National Transport Commission and the model of cooperative federalism as a success. They said, "The NTC has successfully led reform in a range of areas, including the transportation of dangerous goods, uniform registration, licensing, driving hours for heavy vehicles and Australian road rules." That report from the Building Council also highlighted some limitations. And the things that, on the second occasion I met Mr Vale, was when he came back as chair of the Australian Transport Council and said, "Gee, things haven't moved a lot." Chief amongst the limitations, said the BCA, is that the National Transport Commission has no power to require consistency from governments in the implementation of agreed reforms. Individual jurisdictions may choose to diverge from the reform program or can considerably delay implementation of agreed reforms. Naturally, this is a huge source of frustration for the industry and the Commission and has a direct economic impact on our country. Evolution of transport reform we've seen runs on the board. The National Reform Program so far has helped to prevent a freight crisis and a cost blowout. But this effort needs to redouble in the future if Australia is to remain globally competitive. You can see there with tyranny of distance, the things that you're all familiar with. And an efficient transport system underpins our economy. Transport and storage sector contributes 4.54% of GDP in Australia, employs some 460,000 people, and moves 2.4 billion tonnes of freight a year. Recently, the National Transport Commission released a report, Twice the Task, the challenge to ensure Australia's transport system remains globally competitive, as the transport task doubles by 2020. If we do nothing, the report says, another 50,000 trucks on the roads will clog urban arterial roads, and bottlenecks will further impede access to freight terminals and ports. Australia needs an integrated long-term reform agenda to manage the growing freight task safely. Only if all those policy levers for productivity, safety, compliance, etc., are working together can we have our cake and eat it. This is move more freight more safely at less cost. This is a change to the traditional reform model for transport. We used to fix what was broken. Then we became a bit more sophisticated by packaging up reforms, such as trading axle mass and length for improved vehicle safety and less engine emissions. Only now in Australia is an integrated freight economics model for reform emerging. For example, we are unlikely to get B-triples running on intercapital routes without the planning investment in the road network, addressing the safety and compliance risks of longer trucks, and setting an economic price for roadwear. Industry, though, is willing to pay a fair road use cost to get B-triples on roads like the Hume Highway. In fact, one major national transport operator gave me his company credit card to get this reform moving. He said, I don't care what it costs, just get me the B-triples from Melbourne to Sydney. I've taken an imprint and gave the card back. I'll come to truck charges shortly. This bloke here, the good-looking fella, his name's Rick Taylor, an owner-driver who carries fuel to farms and businesses in central Queensland. He had a good idea for a better smart truck design and sketched it on the back of his wife's writing pad. The truck can be broken up, it's modular, front half is used for deliveries to farms and sites where access is poor, the rear trailer can be unhooked and used as a storage tank. An extra 6-ton payload also helps Rick absorb recent cost increases and stay viable. Terrific. Very creative, innovative. What Australians do well. But as his new truck was rolling down the production line, he only then found out it broke every rule in the book. It's too long, too heavy, and so on. Luckily, the performance-based standards approach that the Deputy Prime Minister referred to, a COAG reform, has allowed him to get his smart truck assessed against performance standards to prove it's safe and won't break bridges. It's now up and running on a special permit. Performance-based standards, there are some examples. The track axle truck with a particular type of axle creates extra 6 pallet capacity. The car van down the bottom, 10,000 less truck trips a year, and the cars are protected much more. And the Pilkington glass special performance-based vehicle provides a particular need for that client. Even with the COAG ticket on performance-based standards and strong Productivity Commission endorsement, the National Transport Commission is concerned that some governments are still not fully committed to this major productivity and safety reform. Attempts to wind back the clock on axle mass limits are being driven by fears about increased road wear and the impact on road budgets. And there will be no meaningful road network for these smart trucks to run on until this issue is resolved. A road which doesn't wear out is classic Yes Minister stuff. The hospital built, staffed, but you don't want any patients. While Australia is agonising about these productivity reforms, global competitors rising from the bamboo fields of Southeast Asia threaten to beat us at our own game. An international transport conference in China next month will discuss how they apply Australian performance-based standards and the use of Super B doubles between Shenzhen port and major freight centres. We can't afford to go backwards on productivity and safety. The performance-based standards reform, as the Deputy Prime Minister indicated, will go to Transport Minister shortly for voting. Our challenge to the governments is to put the system in place, map a network, and agree on common sense charges and work with industry to ensure this reform evolves to reach its full potential. I see no practical alternative to objective performance-based standards on the table for long-term productivity reform. It must be given a chance to work. Pricing. Agreeing on a way forward for heavy vehicle charges is fundamental to the broader transport reform process. The three stages endorsed by the Productivity Commission inquiry, which COAG has taken on board. Step one is to get the first building block in place to ensure heavy vehicles continue to pay their way as higher road spending flows through to charges. And the National Transport Commission has been charged with managing that process. A report recently by your own organisation, CEDA, Export Weakness Investment Strength, identifies the removal of infrastructure bottlenecks as critical for Australia's export success. Higher road spending is giving all the obvious benefits, safety, productivity, reducing wear and tear, with B-double access a particular beneficiary of road upgrades. Step two is once the building block of cost recovery is in place, Australia can move towards broad pricing reform. Incremental pricing trials in 2008 will see transport operators working to carry extra payload above the existing truck mass limit by paying the asset owner for the extra road wear and tear. To close the loop, if the benefits can be clearly demonstrated, mass distance location charging of heavy vehicles will generate demand-side pricing signals to encourage the use of the right truck on the right road, and supply-side signals to influence the right road investment in the right place at the right time. For the business sector, these better price signals will encourage freight users to design their logistics networks around lower-cost freight corridors. The final frontier is to close the loop between what road users want and what the road asset owners can deliver. Linking road use to road spending through a road fund would require major institutional reform. We'll see where we go on that. And this debate clearly brings rail into the debate. So what's next? As part of the National Transport Commission strategic plan, we're canvassing the views of industry and government to ensure Australia keeps its foot on the national transport reform pedal, remains globally competitive. Industry is telling us that better innovation, technology and information sharing are essential to get more productivity out of the system. That is to use spare capacity on the road and rail networks and to ensure our trucks and trains carry less fresh air. And this needs to be done across road, rail, sea, ports and air, a genuine supply chain approach. Those of you who have the opportunity to go down to Port Botany, watch empty container trucks coming out while queues form outside the gate to pick up a load. Or livestock trucks left waiting at ports with their decks full of cattle because no one told the poor tired truckie that the ship is delayed. Simple things. Just as the Deputy Prime Minister outlined replacing the 1930s electronic staff technology and investing in the latest train management and signalling technology to deliver more capacity on rail is seen as an example of what can be done. It's simple stuff, but we're not working together and sharing information, often because of fierce competition within and across the transport modes. Mention's been made of the collaborative multimodal approach, the Hunter Valley coal chain model, offering strong potential for increased productivity. But there are deep-seated issues in that particular case to be addressed as well, with an estimated $560 million being paid per annum in wasted demurrage costs. I think we still have a big problem. If we're to address these broad challenges cooperatively, Australia must leave in transport the patch protection, the silo mentality behind, and agree on a national approach to move freight more safely and efficiently. From an infrastructure point of view, AusLink is making a huge contribution to the progress that's required, but ultimately it's down to you and I and the people in the industry to lift our game. Thank you.